Welcome, Andy Shivers. Thank you for coming on to the podcast tonight. You're running for Senate District 11, and I'd like to ask you why. I'm very curious why.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Max, for having me on this evening. I appreciate that. I am running because I believe it's important to show up when you see a need, right? And I have been at our Capitol advocating for legislation 3 days a week for the last 6 years, for legislation that I believe affects our children and our futures for Iowa, and that affects survivors of sex trafficking within our state. And so I've been showing up because I have found that the emails and the phone calls are important to our legislators, but when you can put a face behind that name, it just bridges those gaps and you're able to really develop relationship within the Capitol in that way. I really had a heart that the Lord laid on me to really just be praying for our legislators and their families. And so through getting to know them face to face, I started reaching out to many of the wives of our legislators and just saying, hey, how can I be praying for you today? How can I be walking with your family? And I tell you, we've had so many legislators in our home of, our vehicles broke down. Well, that's fine. My husband can fix any vehicle. That's fine. They come over, there's roast in the crock pot. We'll get the car fixed. We'll send everybody back on their way. And so being able to build those relationships has just been such a blessing to get to know our representatives as friends, as brothers and sisters in Christ, and just be walking in that way.
Wow. Yeah. When you were explaining that, the thought occurred to me, that's the definition of Iowa nice. Having people in, you know, last minute and just developing that relationship, breaking bread there. That's awesome. So,
well, a lot of people don't realize, you know, so many of our legislators are coming in from out of town. So they've got an issue. They don't have a local mechanic. They don't have, you know, whatever that may be. And some of them are bringing their whole families in. The Cisneros, I mean, they've been homeschooling their kids at the Capitol for like 6 years now, right? The kids sit in one row, mom and dad are legislator and clerk. They're all working and getting things done together. Sometimes the kids need a farm break. Just run on over. That's okay. So it's been sweet. It's been, yeah, there's been a lot of favor in that. The Lord's been good. So
that's great. That's great. Hey, one quick question. So I read just today that Rob Sand is leading Randy Feenstra 51% to 39%. Do you think Iowa could flip blue this governor's race?
Yes. Yep. We are both following the same articles here. I think we need to give a shout out to Craig in this moment, because I'm pretty sure that's where you got that from. That's the numbers I saw anyhow. There is concern about switching blue. Randy is not favored by grassroots, and Rob has this charismatic presence to him. He's young, he's enthusiastic, he gets people fired up. He says what he needs to say in the space to get people behind him, to rally behind him. Randy's not as enthusiastic of a speaker when you're sitting down and you're at the events, right? He's not bringing people in, he's not bringing people around him. So I believe there's a lot of funding behind him. There's a lot of name recognition just from his time at the federal level. And I think that's where those endorsements and things have come in from. But if you look at the four other men that are running, I think they're a lot closer. Like, they've got the grassroots support behind them. And I think that Iowans really need to rally and decide who are they picking out of those four men? Because I'm not sure that Randy can beat Rob. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, if it comes down to Randy Feenstra and Rob Sands, I'm voting for Rob Sands. I've never voted for a Democrat before, but I just can't get behind Randy. He's too much of Rhino Randy, which I can't really get behind. Hey, instead of a Rhino, you're just going to vote for a Democrat if that, you know, if you're not liberally aligning anyway. But so if it comes down to it, just for clarification, I will vote for whatever Republican makes it there, because I just can't align with Rob and his viewpoints. And I think that we will be stuck at the state level and getting any conservative legislation through if we end up with a blue governor. So people just don't realize how much of elections are made at the primaries. November is not when it matters. It is June. June 2nd is when you have options and you have choices about your representation. This is when you can get the true grassroots leaders through.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. So all the listeners out there, please go vote in the primary. Make your voice known then, because after that, it's too late. The one interesting thing that you had mentioned was that there's some people, some Republicans that are even saying that they would vote for Rob Sand over Randy Feenstra. And I think that underlines the frustration, maybe. Maybe that's the right way to put it, that a lot of Republicans have with the GOP of the state of Iowa, especially with this session. And we can jump into some of the topics that I've got for tonight. But life, property taxes, eminent domain, all of these things were things that people, the GOP said that they were going to do this session. And all three of those just dropped the ball. Like nothing really has moved in the positive direction. So what's your thoughts on that?
You are not wrong. You are not wrong. It has been frustrating. And I want to be honoring in how I communicate, because I realize, one, future coworkers here, right? So but also, people get frustrated and they're like, just go in and get this done. Yeah, absolutely. Working as hard as I can. Also recognize you need to get 50 people on the same page. And right now there is so much division. And a lot of that is happening because we have our races going on. We have our governor races. We have congressional races. We have a lot of sitting representatives, legislators at the Capitol that are also all campaigning in different areas. And so they're very pulled in where they're at. And a lot of them are running in new areas for new districts. And so I believe a lot of the campaigning, people are afraid of stepping on toes with elections coming up. But I'm telling you that not doing anything, they should be more afraid with the elections coming, because people are frustrated. And so, so I'll start with pro-life, because that's one of the things that you brought up here. I think, there was some really strong pro-life legislation that came through, HF 2316, which was the life at conception. That one has the equal protections, the limit on IVF, and prosecution of the mother. The other one that I really liked was HF 2332, and that's at life at conception. There's no limits on IVF and no prosecution for the mother. That one was put forward by Representative Dunwell. The 2316 was put forward by Representative Deacon. I thanked Representative Dunwell for putting forward 2332. I understand where Representative Deacon was coming from in 2316, equal weights, equal measures, life at conception. I understand logically where they're trying to come from in the protections for life with the abolitionist bill. I want abortion abolished. I want it gone. I want it done with. What I struggle through is the criminalization of the mother. And I know this is a fairly, it's a touchy topic for a lot of people. As I mentioned, I've worked with survivors of sex trafficking for a real long time. What I have learned in the arenas that I have walked in foster care of teen moms, right? So these would be the heavy areas where abortion would be happening. I was a birth doula that focused on single mothers, and I retired after 300 births. So I've,
oh my goodness,
I've walked the walk here, okay? My youngest client was 11 years old. Okay, this is not like words for me. We were adopted parents. I was an adoption caseworker for 7 years. Our youngest child's adopted, special needs. Life matters. I'm fighting for this. What I know statistically is that 80% of abortions are coerced. Yes, there are the ones that use it for birth control. There are those you know, there are those numbers, but 80% are happen under duress and coercion. It's a boyfriend. It's a family member saying, you can't live here and have this baby. It's a boyfriend saying, I'm going to break up with you. It's a pimp saying, if you don't get the abortion, then I'll beat you until one of you dies. Right. And I've seen it happen. I have physically seen it happen. I cannot say that mother that is already struggling and under duress should now also be criminalized for the choice that she didn't want to make in the first place. I have seen so many brave women choose life when they had communities come around and support them in life as a teen mom, or as a, I was not a teen mom. Well, my husband and I got married at 18. We had our son at 19. Technically, I was a teen mom, but I was a married teen mom. Clarification. Yeah. Our oldest is going to college this fall. We've been married for 20 years.
Wow.
But when communities come around and truly rally for life, you can't say that you value life and then not support it. My husband and I have said, we're not just going to use the words. We're really going to step in. And I've seen that happen successfully. But I've also seen, truly, we're under very violent situations when someone fought and fought and fought not to have that abortion. It got very violent against them. Right. And so from my life experiences and the realms that I've walked, I have a very hard time saying that the mother should be criminalized for that when I know those stats.
Yep. Yeah. So, and that's something my wife and I, we actually brought in a teen mom once through some work in our church. Her mother actually was prostituting her out. Just diabolical, but anyway, she ended up getting pregnant and mother was losing money, and she would punch her stomach. She dragged her down the stairs one time, all of these things to induce the abortion. Anyway, suffice to say that my wife and I stepped in very similar to what you're saying, and opened our house up to her. She ended up having the baby, beautiful little girl. But it's definitely something. I can see what you're saying about not wanting to prosecute her. I guess my thought, you know, on the counter side to that would be, it's illegal to force that stuff. So really, would it be that we would prosecute the mother, or is it in a forced situation that way? Or would we be prosecuting the person that forced that to happen? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And I can get behind the abuser being prosecuted, which they should be for abuse anyway.
Absolutely.
I can get behind prosecuting the doctors that are doing them, right? I can get behind that. I struggle, like I said, from the trauma history that I have walked with so many, to then add that onto their criminal record. And they go, oh, well, you know, the judge will sort it out. And if it, you know, if it was done under coercion, then they'll be released. Great. But how long were they sitting in a jail cell after already being traumatized? And, you know, years is the average for sorting out court cases. Are they now further traumatized for something that was beyond their control for years of navigating court systems? So I think I understand the heart behind it. I think that there's a lot of unintentional harm that could happen with the HF 2316, the Representative Deacon's bill.
Brings up an interesting thing, because I supported 2316, but then it was, I would consider myself an incremental abolitionist, where we might. However, my frustration was when John Dunwell, Representative Dunwell, canceled the subcommittee for 2332, citing that he didn't have the support of the caucus. What's your thoughts on that? Why? I mean, we've pretty much got the supermajority. We may have the supermajority in the House. I haven't checked recently with all the changes, but it's at least nearly a supermajority in the House. We nearly have a supermajority in the Senate. We have a red governor seat. If not now, when? And now he I would say, balked on it. What's your thoughts on that?
It's hard when it's your friends. But I was discouraged. I was very frustrated. When Representative Dunwell pulled that, I would also, for those that aren't familiar with abolitionist terminology, then it might be people are like, what are you even talking about? Incrementalist, things like that. I think that wars are won one battle at a time. I grew up playing the game of Risk. I never took over world domination in one turn. It just simply didn't happen. I won one territory at a time. I think that that is a realistic way for things to happen. I think that's also the way that you can build relationships. And like, that's how you make cultural shift and change, not like flipping the table. People just get startled, right? I was discouraged. I think that the reasoning of we didn't have the support, so we didn't run it, is poor reasoning, just very bluntly.
Yes, I agree.
You give it a try. You throw out every Hail Mary you've got. Why? Because the life is worth fighting for. We knew that 2316 wasn't going to make it, but Representative Deacon threw it out anyway. I appreciate his guts for doing that.
Yes, absolutely.
But Representative Dunwell's gave a better odds bill of running through, right? Like, there was a higher probability of that bill running through. And I just, I think you give it everything you've got. I think you try. And if amendments are made, well, at least you tried. We have, like you said, we have majority, possibly supermajority. There's not a reason that we can't get a strong life bill through. And if we can't, then that shows much bigger problems that, you know, watch who is endorsing to who. Watch out for where the money is coming from. Watch out the endorsements. Watch out for the rhinos, right? Like, get in and know who your legislators are and what their positions really are, because this does truly, truly matter. And I think you try, you know, what bill was it? There was the ESA. They said the ESAs were never going to make it through. And it made it through, you know, pro or con, whatever people want to think about that. I think that parents should get a choice in their kids' educations. But they said, there's no way this bill is going to pass. And it did, right? Because they put it out and they pushed for something that they didn't think had a chance. They thought that defining gender in the Iowa Constitution was not going to pass. And we passed it. I was one of the speakers on that bill when we had thousands of protesters there. I was one of the speakers that they asked to come in to define what a woman is. And it was, I mean, we were in holding rooms for an hour and a half to 2 hours with security surrounding us. It was a aggressive day at the Capitol.
But I was there for a couple of those.
It was a messy session, but we got it through. It was. When people said it wasn't going to happen. And I think you have to give it the try. And I think that backpedaling is hard. And Representative Holt had supported the bill. Representative Holt had supported Dunwell's bill. And so I think it had a shot. And that's frustrating that they didn't make it forward after Representative Holt had spoken in favor of it already. I think it had a chance.
There's that level of put your name on the record so that when you go back to the constituents, you don't have excuse. And now it's... this might come across as a little bit strong. So life at conception now has been killed by, as I see it, Representative Holt and Representative Dunwell. And I think that they're men that are good men. I love Representative Holt's fighting spirit on eminent domain. And he has taken some very hard stands. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. But then there's also that, you know, now they're the face of, those two are the face of killing that bill. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me why. So anyway, I appreciate your thoughts on that. I see the time sneaking up on us. So I'm going
to. You're right. There's one more piece I will add to that.
Absolutely.
And that is one piece that a lot of people don't always think about is, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong. Well, no, what is wrong is there is often higher ups above our legislators that are actually the ones playing the card that say, don't put this on or there'll be issues. Don't put this on or there'll be issues. quite honestly, for Representative Dunwell, he's retiring. I think he should have gone out with everything he had. He's not worrying about reelection. Yes. I understand for Holt of going, oh man, you know, you saw in the Senate where leadership got stripped of their authority for going against the higher ups, right? Yeah. Well, how do you have a voice if you've been stripped of everything before you even step in? Yeah. It's a messy game. I've seen it multiple times. I'm like, why didn't this get a table? Like, why didn't this bill ever get brought forward? And they said, because higher up within the Capitol said to shut it down because it wouldn't get signed. And so that that's a hard space. It's a hard space when there's so many voices speaking in, but ultimately the job is to represent the district. And if your constituents said to do it, and if the Lord said you do it, you move. I don't care. When a higher up said otherwise, because my higher up, the Lord Jesus Christ, told me that life matters and that I cannot stand behind destroying an image bearer of my creator.
Yes, absolutely. That's so beautifully put. So a very good friend of mine that's in the district, whenever found out that we were doing this interview, he wanted me to ask you a question about foster care. And I think that you can really speak into that void, given that you've had a tremendous amount of experience in this. But essentially, as I understand it, there are parents who, you know, when in the foster care, their kids in foster care, they have been stripped of, or they have been slated to be stripped of their parental rights. And adoption is to take place by the foster care parent. And basically, there's not enough judges and such to work the cases. And so these parents that are dirtbags, we'll just put it that way, they are still able to have visits with the kid. And it creates a tremendous amount of trauma for the kid to go back and relive and, you know, just be reminded of the abuse that that child left. And then the foster parent now has to bring that child back after that visit and pick up the pieces. So I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are on that, of what ways could Iowa improve the foster care system?
Yeah. You're speaking my life stories there for a long time, right? Maybe even a little actively, as we still have, we still walk within the realms. But a handful of years ago, there was a piece of legislation passed, and I don't remember the year, and I apologize for that, but I feel like it was around 7 years ago. Time flies. It could be 5 to 10 in there, but I feel like it was around that 7 range. And what had happened in that legislation is ultimately it was decided that termination of parental rights is rarely going to happen. Like, you have to it's bad. I've literally seen parents getting visits that are actively using meth and I've seen the worker say, well, as long as grandpa is still there that can remove the baby in case and walk out of the house with the baby in case mom is high, then they still can have the baby.
Wow.
What if mom blows up the house?
Yeah.
With her meth. Exactly. Grandpa no longer can get the baby out, right? And for teenagers, well, teenagers can get up and walk out of the door if there's a safety concern. So they very rarely get rights terminated. Very, very rarely. Cause they're like, nope, they can physically get themselves to safety. So it's, I don't think it was one of the best pieces of foster legislation that have been written. I understand the heart of keeping families together was the good intending goal, right? I believe that a lot of things happen through good intentions, but there's not always well thought through consequences of that. And so the consequence of this is it's not a shortage of workers, though there is a shortage of judges and workers. It's it has to be real, real bad before it gets that termination place. And I've seen them over and over and over again where the cases drag out for 7 and 8 years because right before termination, the parents check themselves into a rehab. or they got a job. They did one step that showed progress. And so, we have to show that we did everything that we could to reunify so that if rights are terminated, the family cannot come back and say that they were terminated unjustly. I understand and appreciate that piece, right? You don't want that termination revoked and then the adoption to be terminated, right? So I understand some of that. But we aren't putting kids' best interests at heart here, right? Again, the attempt was reunification is always best. Well, actually, that's not actually always the case. So in our adopted daughter, sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes that's not the case. And so I believe, so I've developed some really great relationships within HHS on the committee and Senate and at the state level and with different organizations within there. So I spoke on some foster legislation this year, a couple of really solid bills that I think are going to help the burden of the cases. And so some of that, I don't know if you're familiar with Together for Good or Safe Families. And those are a couple of organizations, and it's kind of the church's approach to foster care. And so it's when there's a family that's struggling or a parent that's struggling, they can come in and voluntarily partner with Together for Good. And they can say, hey, I need to check in for this rehab, but I don't have a safe place for my kids to be. I'm struggling with homelessness. I'm struggling with mental health. I'm struggling with X, Y, or Z. They can partner. And then these host families partner with the biological families. First off, much higher success rates when you've taken out every worker in between and you're just able to develop relationships between the bio parents and the support families, right? Like it's so much more because I've had so many angry bio families and they're like, you stole my kid. And I'm like, I didn't steal your kid. They were placed in my home. Yep. I'm just here. Like, I'm just hanging out. How can I help you? I promise I have four. I don't need more. How can I help you to succeed? Because this is the goal here, right? But when you have everyone in between and so many wonderful workers, right? So I went to school for social work because I thought we needed more believers in the realm. We needed a little bit more Jesus in the social work realm. Yes. but wonderful workers, but there's not enough. There's high turnover. People are in very escalated emotional spaces. When you can take out all the in-between and just sit down on someone's couch and get to know one another and really deeply hear the heart struggles, it's so much easier to work through. So it's also voluntary, right? It's not court ordered. So you're more likely to partner with that person when it didn't feel like you have all this heightened, like, if I don't do all this, all my kids are gone. Right? When you're working through those escalated feelings constantly, you're not able to really get to the deep root of what's causing the trauma to begin with, right? So Together for Good allows the parents to step back, do what they need to do, and then partner with the safe families to go together. That has cut down Iowa's foster cases from 10,000 to 5,000 in the last couple years of kids in the system. Okay. Wow. It matters. Church, step up, rise up, get involved.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. We can continue in that. That takes off the burden. So those that are at the places where they are the parents that shouldn't be reunified for many safety reasons, your story resonates very closely as that was a story that of our own adoption, right? It was a generational family member pimping situation. Bio family should not be re-involved. Reunification is not the goal in that situation. There's extreme safety risks. This is not even something where they're trying to do differently, right? I've just taken an income source for them. You know what? Termination needs to happen here. Okay. We already saw how this happened once. You don't get to do it again.
Yes.
And so this was in our situation, these are the times where DHS does need to be involved. This is where the judge does need to terminate. This is not one that Together for Good or Safe Families can carry, right? There does need. So there's like the early intervention, right? Safe Families and Together for Good is kind of the early intervention before you get to the, yep, this was absolutely, there's no turning back from type situations. And that's where HHS needs to be involved. That's where you can get to the terminations And I think there needs to be clear parameters, because it's very case by case for how it's handled. It very much depends on your worker. And while I appreciate the autonomy that workers have, there needs to be a little bit more of a playbook to go by of these like, and I hear frustration from bio families a lot, because I work with a lot of young moms that are struggling. Like, we don't even know what our goals are. They won't tell us what we need to do to get our kid back. And that's also a great frustration. And then if we're just being very transparent, the longer a case is open, the more funding moves through.
Funding. Talk about that.
Well, there is so much money federally and statewide that goes to foster care. And as long as those cases are open, then those departments continue to receive that funding. Those judges continue to get paid for every court hearing. Those attorneys get paid for every hearing. Those workers get paid for every hearing.
So there's a
face, and I'm probably going to get fired from all HHS work in this one. So
there's a motivation to a degree
to not close a case.
Right.
Right.
Uh huh.
I didn't know that. Wow. How do we fix that?
We put parameters around it. We go, I don't know exactly how the funding gets hey, do you know what? You've been involved for 3 years. The case is closed, period, right? Like, I feel like there should be some sort of a time clock. And I think that would put some incentive on it. I understand that trauma took a long time to get into. It can take a long time to get out of. So I don't want that to be you didn't figure out all your spirals in 6 months, you're done, right? I don't think that's a realistic expectation. But I do believe that putting some clear parameters on, we aren't dragging this out for 7, 8, 9 years. That instability is not best for the children. It is not what's best for anyone involved. This case gets closed by X date, period.
When you say 7, 8, or 9 years, is that hyperbolic or is that realistic? Is that?
I've seen it happen.
Is that?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, because often what happens, so what people don't realize is that often when a child is removed, mothers often get pregnant again very quickly when a child is removed from their care. We like to keep sibling groups together. We like to keep family groups together. Mm-hmm. Terminating rights of one sibling and not the other does not happen very often. It's usually all together. And so when you've got, you're getting close to termination and then another baby happens, then you kind of slow down that clock to try to give mom a chance to keep all the siblings together or another family member.
Wow.
It's a position that not everyone realizes, and I think unless you've been walking the realm for decades, you don't necessarily realize. And I don't mean to say that everyone has these terrible intentions, but money motivates people for a lot of things. And so there are those eggs, those bad eggs in there, that have created some of this epidemic of continuing trauma in foster care.
Wow. I want to move to one more thing, cancer, and then we'll conclude. But cancer rates in Iowa are skyrocketing. I think we're second in the nation for cancer in the state. Mm-hmm. Where I think we're leading the state in young people's cancer for children. Yeah. And just recently, The state heard a report on cancer, and one of the reports said that smoking was the primary cause, or at least one of the primary causes. And so one of the recommendations was to increase the sales tax on tobacco products. However, last year, the Senate, I believe it's the Senate, put a bill forward to give chemical companies legal immunity. So I'm trying to make sense of this. Of we say we care about cancer from a legislative standpoint, and then we try to give legal immunity to pesticide companies, all while allowing tobacco products or limiting tobacco products. So can you talk to that and how we can go about fixing our cancer crisis?
Yeah, this is such a big question. Okay. So first off, this is something that hits home for a lot of people, right? With our cancer,
absolutely.
Everybody knows someone, right? So we're a family of farmers. Farmers also have some of those really incredibly high rates. The immunities for the pesticide companies is a problem. Same for, well, I don't believe that any company should have immunity because I don't believe that you have ambition to create a safer, stronger product if you have no liability. Okay, I think that across the board for any pharmaceutical, for any chemical, for anything, I think that competition creates better products, period. I think it creates better candidates too. I think competition's a good thing.
Yes.
It makes you thrive. Well, let me finish my train of thought there with that. Okay, so my husband's family specifically is farmers. He lost his grandma to cancer, his uncle to cancer, his aunt to cancer, and this fall his dad to cancer. All of them within a couple of years of one another. In fact, my father-in-law, aunt, and uncle all passed away in 6 months.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Okay.
This has been, there's a lot. There's no incentives to create safe products for farmers. There's monopoly on the companies. We're spraying it on our foods. It's in our waterways. It's soaking in our ground. While I appreciate, like, Iowa has good, rich soil.
Yes.
But we have created in legislation, we've made it impossible for farmers to branch out of anything except for traditional farming. It is so expensive and there's so many we've taken the creativity out. We've taken the competition out to try it a different way because there's the legislation absolutely ties the hands of farmers where they need to essentially be losing money for 5 years before they say that the chemical is out of the crops long enough to be labeled as anything other than a traditional farmer. Well, if you're growing organics, but you haven't been, chemicals have still been on your land for the last 5 years, you can't sell as organic. So you are putting in the money to plow your crops and to seed crop, like to cover crop, to do all the things for 5 years before you can start making the money of the rates of organic. We've made it impossible. They go broke before then. We need to remove some of that legislation. There's also, you have to have a minimum number of feet around you that cannot have any chemical to be counted as organic. So on our personal homestead, so my husband does traditional row crops up in Carlisle. We run a regenerative holistic farm down in Knoxville. We have 40 acres. We do pasture, beef and chickens. We rotationally graze. We believe that the Lord created us to be stewards of what we have. And so we want to steward that well. So that includes our physical health, but also the land that we've been given and the lives of the livestock that the Lord has given us. Their livelihoods matter. This all matters to us and how we raise things. We think it's also great for our kids to learn how to care for something. So like I said, we've got 4 teenagers. They're all very engaged in the day-to-day of the homestead. This is how we roll. And we cannot, though we put no chemicals on anything. We don't use any medications on our homestead. Nothing. Everything's, it would be completely organic, except that the neighbors around us are not organic. So we do not have enough mileage between their land and our land to be able to label ourselves organic. So we can say we are holistic farmers. So because of this, and while I recognize, like, yes, you do need to use caution, like, there needs to be legislation that incentivizes free market and incentivizes creativity and ingenuity. We have intelligent people in our state. We need to stop tying their hands and telling them what they can or cannot do on their own land to be able to steward it in the ways that they feel the Lord called them to do.
You brought up, I believe that would take us a certain mileage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the interesting piece for me is that if you have a right on your property to not use chemicals. However, because the neighbors are using chemicals, it kind of tramples on your rights. So they have rights, but you also do too.
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting thing to me, how you balance that. And it's interesting that only one of us in this state gets those type of rights.
What, you not the ones that are incentivized by Big Ag? What? Shared it.
Yeah.
Again, man, there are some endorsements I am not going to get. It truly is, like, my thing is, if you think that chemicals are best, that's okay. Like, if you believe that the way that you're doing it is the best, that's all right. But we need education and we need free market, because I believe that this would resolve a lot of our cancer issues if we quit telling people what they had to put on their food, what they had to put in their bodies. Yes, smoking's bad, vaping's even worse. But these studies that they put out that they recently did, where they did this whole presentation at the Capitol, did not even touch crop chemicals.
Yep.
But if you would like to know what money pays for things, like I mentioned, sometimes it incentivizes things. It maybe incentivizes the directions of the studies as well.
Mm-hmm. You mean to tell me those studies aren't really scientific? I'm just kidding.
Oh, man, you're going to get me fired as some Wahoo conspiracy theorist. And I'm not, but it's only a conspiracy if it's not true. And I've just been in the realm long enough, right? And I think that I believe that the experiences that I've had give me a very unique perspective coming into the Capitol, because I have holistic farming, I have traditional farming, and I understand why the traditional row crops needs to be done the way it is in order to be able to feed your family and pay your bills. I get it. I don't judge you're doing what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Not everyone else cares about the pastures and everything else, so you aren't being forced to do it the way I'm doing it, but we should create the options. Also, the experiences with HHS and the relationships that I've already built within the Capitol across the board, I think, are an asset to me walking in the door. I know these are good things. And I believe that what I stepped into just as a prompting from the Lord of stepping in and engaging, he has been honoring. And now we're coming full circle and okay, now it's time to run. And now there is a voice at the table that's already has trusted relationships. I already know how to get bills done because I've walked them through from day one. I already know who to talk to for each area. I can come in and just start working. And I have HHS, I have farming, I have human trafficking. Yep. I have it's a very broad covering that I'm able to walk into without as heavy of a learning curve, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Mandy, it's kind of weird.
Thank you so much for This interview has been very informative, especially with the DHS and foster care and all that sort of stuff. Thank you so much for doing it. How can they, constituents find out more about you, and how can they get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So my website is shiversforsenate.com, and that's shivers just like you're cold. S-H-I-V-E-R-S, shiversforsenate.com. My socials are shiversforsenate. I have been very active on my socials. You can see where I've followed some of the legislation. I try to talk through like what that looks like and what I'm doing. And you're welcome to come see me at a variety of areas. There's going to be a cookies with the candidates in Warren County in Indianola on May 4th. I would love for people to show up there. I've got yard signs. I know it sounds silly, but put out the yard signs. Let people in the district know that I'm here and that I've got your support, because it truly does. It says a lot to go, oh, look, there she is. And look at all the people coming around her, right? Otherwise I'm just kind of back door. And I've been in this race since December. So I've had time to build some name recognition in the community, and it's time to start going, all right. And now we're putting our stake in the ground and we're saying, this is who we're behind. Get behind her also. Let's go. I'm never going to turn down a donation, and I'm never going to turn down a door knocker. So if you want to come knock doors with me and just help get my name introduced in the community, happy to have you along for a walk. It's great exercise. And donations go a long ways for the mailers and social streaming. So, yeah, thanks for asking.
Mandy Shivers, thank you so much for this interview. Thank you for sitting down. And hopefully the listeners learned something more about you. And I definitely did, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.